On this episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me for our first recap episode. We are recapping week one, 15 of the 16 games we hit on. We give a spicy or a mild take. A lot of fun. See you guys in a second. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I am Nate Tice. We have our first weekly recap episode because we finally had some football games to watch, to ogle at, to overanalyze, to have takes, hot takes, lesser takes, mild takes, wild takes, every version I saw out there. Sometimes we already had some retakes on some games, which has already been really fun. That's what's great about having a Tuesday recap show. We get to that point. It's not the initial Sunday initial reaction. We get to take a deep breath, maybe two breaths, and then we get to present what we hopefully saw, what we hopefully get to review. And to help me do that every single week is my friend, Matt Harmon himself. How are you doing today, Matt?
Nate, I'm doing so good. We had a great week one. It was awesome to be just washed over by the tidal wave of information, over information. Like you said, the reactions and the overreactions. I feel like we're going to kind of walk the line of that in this particular show today, which I think is pretty exciting. But nah, man, it was great to have football back. And I think, you know, last night's game, Monday night, it was fine. But overall, I think we had a pretty electric, like, ISO Island game set up here for week one, which to me just made the week that much better.
Good ISO games and a great Sunday morning slate. A lot of, you know, the witching hour was witching. It was so that was very nice. And that just kind of gets you back into the football mode. I actually, having that little Friday night kind of double squeeze was kind of nice. I'm not going to lie. I kind of enjoyed that going Fridays. Oh, sorry, wife. Football on. I'll watch him, but I gotta keep an eye on this. Sorry. I got to take a note here. Yeah, it was kind of fun for me. I'm not going to lie, but
I'm pretty concerned about my marriage in the future. But I mean, if like, because Friday night football, you know, this was like a tester.
It was a tester.
It was a tester, but that was the one time going on the East Coast was being on the East Coast was nice. Cause we'll be like, oh, we can go out to, you know, our favorite little wine bar, maybe have a little dinner, and then games 8:15, come back by the time you won't be wanting to go to bed by that point. So it was all good. You know, the no kid that life, that was useful.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to balance mine around. Usually bedtime is right at halftime for the night games. So that's always nice. So I can kind of balance where I don't miss too much. I've gotten really good at rewinding on YouTube TV, but every single week though, I have no ad to give this time. This is great. I can just transition to this. So every single week though, we are going to be recapping the previous week's games, the previous weekend's games. Matt does a lot of work watching all this stuff. I know I do as well. I am kind of glued into my office, you know, reviewing. I have access now to Next Gen Stats, which is a lot of fun. But every single week, we're going to recap 5-6 games, 5-6 players, and just kind of put a maybe more of a deep dive, more of a recap. Maybe that you did not see. Maybe it's obvious. Maybe some more in-depth stuff. That's what we're hopefully doing on Football 301. This week, though, because I felt like my eyes were all over the place except for one game, which I gave you, and I'm going to tell you that in a sec. But, eyes were everywhere, and it's kind of like I have a lot of feelings about a lot of different games. So when we were talking yesterday, I kind of said that to you. Maybe we dabble on every single game, and rather than, you know, us having to divvy up 15 or 16 games or do them all by ourselves, divvy it up, split them down the middle. Matt and I are going to take every game. We're going to have either a hot or mild or medium take off of the game. It could be season long, could just be that one game sample, could be a player. I am not sure what Matt had for each one. We're going to spin a wheel and decide whether we give the hot take or the less hot take, the mild or medium take. And we'll have Producer Stone spin each one. We split up the game. So for instance, the first game that we're going to talk about will be Jets and 49ers. Matt has a take for that game. We'll spin the wheel, see how hot he gets. Then I'll go into the next game. We'll start back on Friday night with Packers and Eagles and go from there. Everyone good? I'll give you a minute to look at your menus.
Yeah.
Decide your items.
There's a few of these games. I said this to you in the pre-show meeting, Nate, where I'm like crossing my fingers that I get to give the spicy take. In others, I'm kind of almost going to be relieved if I don't have to give this spicy take, because it might be too hot for the palate of some people out there. But I'm looking forward to it. Let's do it.
It's a variation of how much I want to sweat. Really, how much I want to make my mention sweat. That's why I want to decide and see how it goes. Well, really not for me to decide. It's for the wheel to decide. So like I said, we'll start off with Monday Night Football, which was the Jets at the 49ers. 49ers, you know, did their job, took it home, got their first win. Everybody was out there except for Christian McCaffrey, all these signings, all this stuff, but they all ended up playing. And it's actually McCaffrey, the guy that ends up missing time. So go figure. All right, producer Stone, spin the wheel. If you're watching on YouTube, you get to see this. So a little benefit for all our YouTube viewers. All right, we got spicy on our very first wheel spin. So Matt, what is your spicy take, your spicy takeaway, spicy observation from Jets and 49ers?
I'm so glad this one I get to give the spicy take on, because I can probably only say this on this show. I definitely cannot say it on the fantasy show, but the 49ers should just hold out Christian McCaffrey all month. Honestly, like,
it's a long season.
It's a long season. Like I said, I could not say that on the fantasy show because the backlash would be absurd. People are already, myself included, in at least one dynasty league, completely banged over this Christian McCaffrey, you know, late announcement he's out of the game. But man, not only did I think Jordan Mason looked good in this game, and I've always thought Jordan Mason has some pop to him. You see him in preseason, very, very limited moments in the regular season. I was always kind of intrigued of what this offense would look like with him instead of Elijah Mitchell as the running back too. I think Mitchell's a good player, but I just thought that Mason brought some more attitude and some more finishing ability at the end of his runs, which I think you saw last night. But almost secondary to that, Nate, I thought the offensive line was revelatory last night.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably the weakest unit on the offense by a long shot. You know, is once the receivers are all integrated, when Ayuk's, you know, got some more practice under his belt, I think things will be fine in the pass catching department, of course. But the way they blocked, I mean, working cohesively as a unit, Dominic Pooney, the rookie right guard, was excellent in this game.
He was.
So if they can set the tone like that every single week from a run game perspective, and even Mason made a couple of plays as a pass catcher. I had a few plays called back too due to holding and some ticky-tack stuff, in my opinion. But like, I think that he looks so good that I'd feel confident if I'm the 49ers. Like, yeah, I'm not risking it with McCaffrey in week two, maybe not week three. Like, let's get through the first month of the season and then bring our best player back.
Just, yeah, give Debo more touches. I mean, that's why you have all these guys. You can spread the wealth. It's so cool when you can go a game and the guy that I felt like I spent a whole entire month talking about, Brandon Ayuk, I wrote a whole article about, and it felt like never heard his name last night, and they still felt like they were in control of the game. That's usually when the guy that's just got highly paid, especially the skill position guy, is silent. That's all you hear about the next day. It was like, how did they not get him the ball? 49ers just keeps on churning. I
drops
love that.
A touchdown too, like, or you know, at least probably 9 times out of 10 makes that play in the end zone.
Right.
And yeah, it's like, well, probably should have been in training camp, but who cares? They still beat the hell out of the Jets.
They had the all those penalties and they still were moving the ball and they still scored on the drive on the one where they just kept getting the stuff. I feel like this was kind of my takeaway, that the same biggest glaring weakness of this offense, which is Colt McKivitz at right tackle, is still the same big glaring weakness, and that's a good thing. The fact that nothing else, no warts popped up with Christian McCaffrey out against, you know, a Jets defense that I did think maybe take a step back, but they still control the game. It's still a talented defense, especially on the back end. So, no, I really like that one. I was actually curious if that's your spicy one, which your mild one was.
That was my spicy one. My mild one was just going to be, I thought Aaron Rodgers looked good enough. You know, it's like nothing crazy one way or the other. Certainly looked much better than the other Achilles quarterback. I think we from week one, I think we probably grouped those guys together a little bit too much. And I know we'll be talking about the Falcons Steelers here pretty soon, but there's a huge difference between you tear it in week one versus you tear it in week eight when it comes to that Achilles, and also a difference between your front foot or your back foot. So
that's it.
I feel a little foolish grouping those guys just as one sort of unit so much this offseason. But yeah, my mild take was just I thought Rodgers looked good enough to be the quarterback for the Jets and what they need.
The things I noticed, and there's much made about Kirk Cousins' thing and all the gun, and we'll talk about that in a sec. The Jets did do some pistol. They were tossing all their outside zone stuff too, because Rodgers can't reach outside. We have two 2015 Peyton Manning offenses right now. So that's something to keep an eye on.
Amazing.
He did not have a single sprint the whole night, according to Next Gen Stats. That was the other thing. It's that in the pocket, if he doesn't have to move, he can dice him up still. I still thought he was getting zip on the throws. It's the pocket, which we thought, and you're not going to face, you know, Nick Bosa every single week. All right, moving on to Friday night, going to circle all the way back. We are not doing Thursday night. Sorry, Thursday night. Phil, it's just so long ago. You guys know. Spinning the wheel on Packers, Eagles, Technically, it was Packers at Eagles, but in Brazil. All right, we have a mild take on this one. Man, I just starting out with a whimper. Kind of want to get my hot take on this one. I will at the end. But my mild take for Eagles and Packers, it's not that mild. This is the best run game in the NFL. I mean, the Eagles. This is it. This is there's a lot of interesting run games. This is the best run game. It turns out when you put a really talented running back named Saquon Barkley with a good and big offensive line, even one that maybe took a half step back on the interior with a good offensive line coach and a good run scheme, it works. And honestly, they should be running the ball even more. That's really my mild take. This should be a 62-38 run split team. They're not going to ever be that because A.J. Brown will throw his helmet at somebody. But this is an offense that really should be run first, run second. And you would think that a little bit, but I think too many times they do get a little bit where they feel like they have to get to the pass. And I want to see Kellen Moore just kind of repeat those calls, do the Steichen where you just repeat the calls, zero RPOs, separate this offense completely church and state. It is runs and passes. There is no RPOs. There's no hybrid stuff in it because when I watched this, there was some good stuff with this. Kind of be my quasi hot take with it. I'll just throw it in here. Why I want the emphasis on the run is because I do think there's improvements with some of the passing game stuff in Moore's offense, but I still have issues. They had answered the Hurts performed well against the blitz. If you look at the stats, yes, he did. I think he was 8 of 9 or 7 of 8. Watching it though, a lot of it was kind of quick out routes and stuff in the offense that wasn't a. It wasn't so much Hurts finding an answer. Yes, he did, but it was the kind of answers that have always been there. It was nothing new. So it was good that he found those answers, but it wasn't like this is some revolutionary thing of the new offense. And other things was like designer stuff. The Saquon Barkley touchdown was against the blitz. So that was play action. So it got blocked up. Packers blitz stuff is also two thumbs down.
Yeah.
Two thumbs down. It's so unoriginal. Yeah, it has me double thinking some Packers takes, but defensively at least. But I just thought he did a fine job. One was there's some botch stuff. I thought he struggled against zone. There were some big man zone splits against man coverage. He was 6-9, 128 yards, you know, almost near a perfect passer rating. Against zone coverage, he was 14-25, 150 yards, threw two picks against zone, and he got sacked twice against zone. And he threw a bunch of passes where he escaped the pocket to his right and threw it away. That was against a Packers defense that I think is more average-ish right now, especially right now. Okay, maybe Falcons will expose this, but a better defense that runs a lot of zone, I don't know, say the Cowboys, might actually give this a little bit more issues. So that's something I'm keeping an eye on for as far as for the Eagles passing game.
Yeah, two things here. Number one, I actually, not to do the crossover episode thing right away, but this was going to be what I wanted to talk with you about tomorrow on the Fantasy okay. Film Room was Saquon Barkley and the Eagles run game. So want to kind of expand why this was so successful. But from a pass game standpoint, too, you mentioned, you know, A.J. Brown might throw his helmet if they go 60-40 run pass. But man, I thought the splits in terms of where they got the ball in week one was exactly what we sort of called back to at one point on this show. Is it just let's not get the third receiver or the second, like get the guys the ball. 26.5% of the targets go to A.J. Brown, 23.5% to Devonta Smith. Exactly right. Perfect. Loved the way Devonta Smith had so many opportunities from the slot, the way they moved A.J. Brown as the farthest outside receiver to get leverage on some short motion stuff. Exactly what you wanted to see from Kellen Moore. I don't think they overdid it with motion. I think they just used it purposefully to gain an advantage for an already great player. And then in terms of air yards, 47% to A.J. Brown, 28% to Devonta Smith. Nobody else cracks more than 13%. That was Johnny Wilson, the rookie receiver. So I think if they use the pass game that way and they're run heavy, I think we will have no issues here.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great example of how you can use motion different ways. Dolphins mm-hmm. are using it because speed kills and a second late, you're dead. Here, it's more they're gaining leverage for guys or gaining right, yeah. like keep a guy off of the ball, get him outstepped and everything. Yeah, just a little minor differences, but great call with that. All right, moving on to, yeah, you got the pair of Achilles games. We got the Steelers at Falcons. Steelers won this game 18-10 with a whole bunch of field goals. You landed on a mild medium take, Matt. What was your mild medium take for the Steelers Falcons game?
Oh, darn. I can't go spicy take behind you Charles McDonald's. You can give it. I'll give it real quick at the end. But my mild take was I just think the Steelers might have the best defense in football, which
ooh, I love it.
It's maybe that's spicy, but I think it's pretty mild considering they have a true game wrecker in TJ Watt, who, you know, he was offsides one of the times that he blew through and sacked the quarterback. But still, he was clearly affecting this game from a snap by snap basis. Going back and watching this game on film, especially focusing on Drake London and the receivers. Of course, I've been inundated with Drake London questions all week. But
I love,
from a coverage standpoint, I thought they really gloved things up, made it tough on Kirk Cousins, where once he had to speed up his process, and clearly he was processing a beat too slow, those windows, even if they were open, they were closed real quick. I thought Joey Porter is a guy who had a great rookie season. I thought he played really well in week one. He's certainly a true breakout candidate this year. And of course, like, Minkah Fitzpatrick is Minkah Fitzpatrick. And dude, my God, Cam Hayward is what, like 40 years old or something, dude, like that? And he was
took on
out,
like, three guys on one play and like
he was outrageous in this game. So like, even just those four players and then some of the ancillary guys, and I think they're gonna, from an offensive perspective, I think the Steelers are gonna be very much 2022 Falcons and be just good enough and kind of, you know, muck things up on that side of the
ball.
Talk
to me, Matt.
Not make a lot of mistakes. You know, Justin Fields does the best Marcus Mariota impression he could do. And I think this team is going to just be in these close competitive games, and this defense, like, if they're going to be probably, maybe if not the best defense in football, one of the three best defenses in football. And that could be good enough for the Steelers to do the Steelers bullshit that they do every single year.
I have something about the AFC North later, hopefully, if I get a hot take. But that, I'm with you on the Steelers defense. They're looking really good. I thought the Falcons run game had some good stuff, but Cousins, there's been a lot, including myself, about what's happened with Cousins and not being able to move, and they're using pistol, and they're 100% pass out of the gun. And it was a great example of tendencies. These are real tendencies that teams look at. But they're not usually you get the 100%er. You usually don't get that. It's more like 70-30 tendencies, 80-20, you know, that you're going on. But you brought up TJ Watt and TJ Watt being able to tee off. This is the ramifications of not being able to run like bootlegs with a quarterback bootlegs. He just can run down the line and tackle Bijan from the back because bootlegs holds that guy. So you could see TJ realizing, you can't move. And then he just
second quarter. He's teeing off like it's the freaking fourth quarter. That's such a good point, because this offense can truly be maximized with a guy, either you're getting under center and you're attacking the middle of the field with deep play action shots. Obviously, none of that. They go under center one snap. They no play action in this game. So it looked like a very limited offense. And yeah, you get a great player like TJ Watt absolutely teeing off like it's, like I said, the damn fourth quarter. My spicy take on this was just Falcons, just play Michael Penix right now. We all see you. Like, we all know you want to. And now I'm thinking back to they rested him completely in preseason. I was like, why are they're not going to play this guy for 3 years or two,
all
you know, 2 years?
All the tea leaves were there, man. All the crumbs were there. I know. It's got me.
I'm cheating. Sure I'm driving the producers crazy giving two takes out. But I got to cheat on that one. Yeah, we don't have to expand on it too much because there's been so much Falcons coverage. But I did at least start fantasizing what this offense would look like. Even if I have questions about Penix, you know, a guy with just a live arm and can, you know, move a little bit
better. It's the sad thing is his number one knock is, even though he ran well, is lack of mobility and creation. So it's just like, oh no, at least he actually isn't hobbled. He actually can move a little bit. No, that was a good one. I there's a lot to take away from this game. Looks like the Steelers are going with Fields. They already announced it. So, which, you know, the cosmic ballet goes on, because that's exactly kind of how I thought they would end up. Didn't think it would be this quick, but they got there. Moving on to the next game. This is one of my games. And if you want to listen to me in the last month, it makes sense. It's Cardinals at Bills. Bills took this one home 34-28, although the Cardinals covered the spread. I am on a medium mile take for this game. You know what? Okay, this is one that was kind of the take was the same no matter what. It's just how much I want to give it. My take is, this Bills offense is good. If you want me to go hotter here, this is the best, most complete Bills offense that Josh Allen has ever had since he's been in Buffalo. The most complete, best overall, however you want to go on. I'm going to use that as my medium mile take on that one. Because if you watch this game, there's a difference between nickel and diming, and the offense feels tight. And there's the difference with that. And when you watch a Bo Nix, You watched Joe Burrow and the Bengals this weekend. You watched a couple other offenses this weekend. Even Jacoby Brissett on the other side of that game. But then you watch Josh Allen nickel and dime, and it feels different because that is truly a quarterback taking what's given to him. And that is the offense that's built to take what's given to them, because you have big, big, you know, jumbo size receivers that we talked about. You have, you know, a run first attitude. Now we saw that in that game. I also want to remind people the wind in that game was over 25 miles an hour in Buffalo. And the fact Josh Allen was completing anything like past any quarterback was completing anything past 10 yards is remarkable in itself. So that's why maybe those offenses, both sides, the passing game felt a little bit more like, okay, it did. And the wind was a big factor in that. The run games looked cool. We'll tell you that on both sides. But that's really why I got excited. We talked about this recently, was that this Bills run game, it's not sexy, but it's going to be hyper, hyper efficient. And that's without Josh Allen included. This is just the running back runs. And you got this complete run game. I haven't posted the cut up yet. I want to write about maybe later this week, but this is a run game that's doing everything well. They do zone runs. They do gap runs where you pull somebody. They use Josh Allen in the red zone. They are really just doing the things that need to attack these defenses that are playing soft against them because they're terrified of Josh Allen. They don't want to play man coverage because Josh Allen can scramble. They don't want to play, you know, a loaded box and single up on the outside because he'll just pop it over the top. So they play these soft zones, and this is the Bills just building their personnel and building their offensive system to go, all right, we're going to pound the rock and get big, burly guys underneath and just pepper you underneath and get all these 7 to 8 yard gains. And that's what's going to look like. And I was a big fan of it. I know the Cardinals defense is even worse than maybe I was expecting. They didn't really do any creative stuff. They're terrified of Josh Allen. So I'm just, wow. I was very bullish on this offense, and I'm more bullish now because that's exactly what I was envisioning with this Bills team. So I think it's just a very complete, sound offense that has the guy that can reach any ceiling he wants. But right now he doesn't have to. So pretty excited about them.
Super excited about this Bills offense after week one. I know we're not going to talk about Thursday night, but I've gotten a lot of people asking me after Thursday night and Rashee Rice just catching slant after slant after slant. It's like, well, why don't defenses take this away? It's like, well, because you have number 15 behind center. And when you have Pat Mahomes back there, even before he had receivers, and now they have some receivers that can affect the game down the field, even back in, you know, 2023 when it's Sky Moore running outside routes for whatever reason and MVS out there, guys you're not really scared of, you still have to respect every blade of grass because he can attack every blade of grass deep outside the numbers along the boundary. He is willing to throw it there and is the best quarterback in the league of doing it. So you can't just crowd the, you can't just close the middle of the field. You can't play middle of the field close coverage against Pat Mahomes because you are going to surrender some serious big plays. Right. That was the whole revolution, was it like 22 when, you know, teams start playing too high against them, the whole thing. This is one of, I think, their counterpunches to it is Rashee Rice. And the Bills are similar that way. You can't just play single high coverage against Josh Allen consistently. Nope. Because you're going to have these guys just, he's going to make you pay. So you're going to have that middle of the field open. You know, Khalil Shakir, 11 yards after catch per reception in this game. And then now, like, I was impressed with Keon Coleman, who I had my questions about, right? But the one thing we know he can do is just go get it downfield and win jump balls. And we saw it already in week one. So now you have that, the guy you can't just glove up the middle of the field. And you now have somebody that he can trust at least early on. One game sample of Keon Coleman just going and getting it downfield too.
Yeah, it made sense in my brain as we talked about it. But really in week one, I was like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I was picturing. Even Mac Hollins getting a touchdown, even though I was like, oh shoot, you got more targets in one game than I thought you were going to get this entire year.
Oh, thank God my guy Mac Hollins, the stupidest prediction I've ever made is he's going to play more than people think in week one. And thank God he found his way in the end zone.
Offense. There's something to be said. I maybe with the Bears defense, is like this, where everybody's a B minus or B on the offense. That's a good thing when there's nothing that anyone can focus on because you have an A plus quarterback that's just going to help out and like nullify any weaknesses that you have. So yeah, or negate, I should say. All right, well, next game up. This was a wonky game. This was Titans at Bears. Titans lost 17-24. Will Levis giveth, Will Levis taketh away. We landed on mild and medium for this one. Matt, what is your mild medium take for Titans Bears?
Yeah, with the caveat here that this might have been the worst combined quarterback game of the week, which, know, there were some rough quarterback performances in week one, but I think this probably, just from an end result standpoint, yeah, has to look the worst.
Giants-Vikings was everyone's betting favorite. Sorry, guys.
Don't worry, we'll get you. We've got that next on the docket. We'll get to your boy Sam Darnold. But my mild take here is that I think the Titans defense was the best unit in this game overall. Ooh, and might be the best unit over the course of the season, which when you just consider what was discussed in the offseason, obviously a ton of attention paid to the Bears offense, those skill position guys with Caleb Williams, even on the Titans. Oh, Will Levis with Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins and Tony, like, what are they doing there with Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears? And, you know, the Bears defense was great to end last year. It felt like in terms of the four units here, the Titans defense really didn't get a lot of discussion, but I was super impressed with, I thought they dominated the line of scrimmage at times in this game, especially on the interior. And they have good players there. You know, Jeffrey Simmons, Sweat, who was an aggressive draft pick by them, but he was great in this game. Yep. Again, consistently disruptive. You know, and I thought from a coverage standpoint, they made things tough on Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams made things tough on himself, you know, maybe forcing into some tighter windows, but I just, again, came away pretty impressed with that side of the ball. I know the Titans never get enough love, but it definitely felt like if Will Levis hadn't given that game away, they certainly could have won this one.
It was just that's the thing with Levis, is he does some nice things, and then it's just he does the stupidest plays possible. Stuff. It's not even just bad. It's the Ritter. It's not just a bad play. It's the stupidest play you could possibly do. Yeah. And that's
a backbreaker.
It is. I'm picturing the picture of him after he threw the pick or the
surrender cobra.
It's like an all-time picture. And just the swirling stuff, you know, like the SpongeBob meme. Oh,
it's an all-time picture, and the video is worse. The video is worse because you're like, if you didn't see the interception, you don't realize that he's surrender cobraing after throwing it away with, like, was it his left hand to somebody in the flat? I mean, just
not
the
even
most
digging
needless
it.
Thing.
Yeah. Just floating it like the end of Rookie of the Year. Oh my God, it was so bad. I know, but I like the Titans defense take. They have good players all around. Like, they just have good vets at all three levels, so I really like that. The Bears offense, the interior O-line woes is still scary to me. Jenkins against Simmons shows kind of like Jenkins's level, even if I like him. And the Bears it feels like for 12 years now, have center issues again. That the center, Colvin Shelton, who I used to like with the Rams, it was just getting beat over and over. And I know it's a tough D-tackle pairing, but if you want to have, you can't have a center lose like that, because that just corrupts the whole offense. So that was really scary for me to watch, because I was like, oh, wow, that was more glaring than I thought it was going to be right away, even if I like a lot of parts of the team. So,
yeah, week three, four, five, they get the Bears, get the Colts, the Rams, and the Panthers. I think they will function much better offensively in those three games than they did in week one against an underrated interior group.
Yeah, Caleb Williams looked like a rookie quarterback, but a couple times he bailed when he shouldn't have, but that's how it goes, man. When those bullets start flying, it's just kind of, it's fast in the regular season. But man, he had a couple of throws. His accuracy is so good. He missed a couple, but his accuracy and ball placement, it's like, okay, we're fine. we're okay. This is more optimistic than maybe some other guys that played this weekend. So I'm still, everyone chill out in Chicago. You guys won a game with defense and special teams. You guys should be really, really used to this type of situation right now. A little low on Shane Waldron right now, though. All right, going on to the next game. Back to my guy.
Here we go.
We got Vikings Giants.
I am praying for spicy. Wheel, give us spicy.
Okay. All right. We got spicy. All right.
Yes.
My hot take: Aaron Jones will finish with a career high in rushing yards this season. This run game looked good, and this is a good run defense they went against. He was consistent. He finished with a 57% success rate. Oh, by the way, you'll hear me use success rate a lot. I know you use success rate a lot, Matt. Success rate, just real quick, whenever you hear me use it, and I'll try and reiterate this once every week or two. Success rate is how many yards you gain depending on the down. So it's not all yards are built the same. Like a 9-yard gain on 3rd and 19 is nothing, but a 9-yard gain first and 10, really nice. So EPA, there's differences, but this is a true like coach metric. Like my dad has used this for forever. Coaches before him used this. He learned it from Brian Bilk, I believe. So, but now we have EPA based ones, and there's a little tiny differences with it. I did a little study with Keegan Abdu about what some of those differences are from Next Gen Stats. So all it is first and second down, half the yards. If it's first and 10, get five or more. Traditionally, it was four, but with EPA, it's more five. There's a couple differences, but that's basically what it is. Second down, half the yards. Second and 10, get five. Second and 16, get eight. You know, first and 15, get eight. Third down, get all of it, 100% of the yards. Fourth down, get all of it, 100% of the yards. So that's a great way to remember what success rate is. Half the yards on first down, half the yards second down, all the yards third and fourth down. So just want to say that I use success rate a lot, especially early in the season when the, you know, sample size isn't gigantic. So wanted to just get that kind of window dressing, not window dressing, that table setting off the plate. So 16 touches though, that's perfect for Aaron Jones. That 12 to 16 touch range, 14-ish carries, two catches. He had a 57% success rate on those runs, which is very good. Anything over 50 is very good. The O-line looked cohesive. Again, I don't think it's an overwhelming unit, but a good, solid unit. And really the offense as a whole, because they put gigantic bumpers for Sam Darnold to operate with. I'm going to be a realist, guys. I like Sam Darnold. Everyone knows that. It's become more of a bit now at this point in time. He was more solid plus than like this, oh my God, this is crazy. This is exactly how he has to play. But what they do is a bunch of bootlegs, a bunch of play action stuff, because the run game is good. And that's why I think Aaron Jones will get fed and Ty Chandler a little bit. As long as he stays healthy, though, like I think Jones, he still has the juice and they are still setting up some good stuff with it because everyone's scared of Justin Jefferson. And you're scared of Justin Jefferson because at any time, Sam Darnold's willing to launch it 40-something yards. That's what Sam Darnold brings. So what's cool, though, is the designs of this offense. They'll run a bunch of nakeds, a bunch of bootlegs, which are the safer, quote-unquote, plays. But with Kevin O'Connell, this is why he's good. Usually that's the tight end. On a bootleg, that's the primary, you know, auxiliary guy. He makes sure that Justin freaking Jefferson is the primary on the bootleg, no matter what. He designs it to figure it out like that. That's just smart coaching. I know it sounds like simple, get the best player the ball. Not a lot of coaches do it. That's why I want to point this out. So, but I think there's a lot of screens, a lot of bootlegs, a lot of play action with just two guys running routes and a check down. This is good for Sam Darnold because it keeps him from his worst habits. It lets him just play loose, play quickly, keep him from going too much into his deep recesses of his brain where he makes mistakes. He still tries stuff that he got caught on, but every mistake he had, and I would say he had three glaring mistakes, all of them I could understand what he was trying to accomplish, which is improvement for him, as opposed to what the hell were you trying to do there? So that's all I have to say about Darnold. It was solid plus. I thought it was going to be exceptional. Oh my God, everyone was tagging me on Twitter. Well, you guys see this? And it was a couple good throws. That's what he'll bring. But it's just to be a caretaker. And I thought they did a nice job of caretaking the offense.
Yeah, solid plus is a great way to describe it. And, you know, I think people expect us to have some kind of knockdown, drag out fight about Sam Darnold. But you're right. It's like it's almost a bit at this point. The optimism and the Sam Darnold. I mean, calling you a Sam Darnold oligarch is definitely a bit. If it's not obvious, that's a bit. But I love your point about Aaron Jones in the run game here. It reminds me a lot of Josh Jacobs and Davante Adams with the 22 Raiders, where he just run into Josh Jacobs run into light box after light box after light box. 0% of his carries went into stacked boxes, according to Next Gen Stats. In this game, 5.8 yards after contact per attempt, so he definitely still has the juice, and it's just all about you got a guy with juice, which they absolutely have not had in Minnesota for a minute here, and you've got a receiver on the other side of the field that just is going to dictate coverages, and you will always err on the side of taking away, which you can't, but trying to take away and trying to defend Justin Jefferson than you will this run game. So yeah, my only pushback to this is just talk to me in November. Is Aaron Jones still healthy? Right? Like obviously if he stays healthy, he's finishing with 12 games.
it's how it goes. No, it is. That's a great point. The Jacobs and Davante Adams thing. These top receivers, that's what it helps out is the run game. And this is, and really, I was lucky enough to, you know, be around my dad's teams as a kid. And Randy Moss was the ultimate with that. They saw cover two every play. So if you ever look back at those run games, didn't matter who was back there, Michael Bennett, Mualde Moore, Ontario, the Wizinator Smith, they, no matter who was back there, they were averaging 5 yards a pop. Mo Williams. And it was just because they were getting the best looks. So that's it's an offensive attack after my own heart. It really is. So I'm liking what I'm seeing in Minnesota so far. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll get back with a few more of the games from week one. All right, we are back, and I'm double dipping. I have another game after the break. We have Patriots at Bengals. Patriots won this game outright. as more than a touchdown dog, 16-10. And really took it to him, if I'm being honest, rewatching that kid. Yeah. So I got the mild medium take. God, it's just been, it's like a Minnesotan's palate, how unspicy this stuff's been. I like spice, so I but I can say that because I'm from there. All right, my mild medium take is more of a I told you so. I want to take right now, which is,
yeah,
I told you this Patriots offense will be okay. I'm not saying good. I'm just saying fine. And also, I do want to say the defense, right? Like, this is a very good defense that we shouldn't be worried about. It's not going to be a sexy team. It's not. But watching how this offense played, this is what the Patriots are going to look like until they feel it's okay to drop Drake May in there, which to me is like, yeah, okay, you're okay. Go, let's put number 10 back there, because I'm optimistic about it, because I think that's just sound. Like, their run game design was the most simple stuff you can do, and I mean that as a compliment. There's always going to be an unblocked guy in the run game. It's how you control him. This is when they say quarterbacks change the math. That's what they're talking about, is that now no one's unblocked. You're like, we can control every guy, 11 on 11. So you have to kind of pick your poison on how you want to do it. But on my favorite run play duo, which is a very attack, very at you power run game, right at you down the hill. If you're in certain sets, if you're like a two tight end set, the point of attack can end up being a bounced run where the cornerback has to tackle from the side. And you could say, yeah, he's making contact at 1 yard, but you can also bet on the math of my 225 running back is going to run through that 185 pound corner's face. And the Patriots made that bet and won every single time. And it's not once, it wasn't twice, it was legit five times, it might have been six. And it wasn't 4 yard gains, it was 10, 12 yard gains. I think even further than that. But this is what this offense is. They're going to run sound run game stuff. This is a Bill Callahan disciple. And that's why I just kept emphasizing to people. It's like, their run game is going to be fine, and they have a running back that can handle it. That's why I got excited. Even Antonio Gibson had some sound runs in this game, which was like, what? You're running between the tackles now? But I like that Jacoby Brissett did a nice job, like, as far as he's a caretaker. He's one of the – that's what he is as a quarterback. But this defense, dude, is – they had the lowest average tackle depth this week, meaning when they made their tackle, what was the yard, how many yards did the offense get? It was 13, because there's big plays, but that was the lowest easily in the NFL in week one. They had the lowest missed tackle rate in week one. They converted their first opportunity to make a tackle at the second highest rate. Funnily enough, had the fewest opportunities at a TFL. All these stats from Next Gen Stats, but this defense kicks ass. This offense, it's a classic run first, couple play action plays, passing game. That's going to be like the 24th best offense, 22nd, but it's not bad. And that's why I kept trying to emphasize to people, this, it's just a below average, not exciting offense until number 10 gets dropped in there. But that's kind of my mild take. My hot take is, why not? I'll throw this in here. Bengals are going to miss the playoffs. If they play like that, they're missing the playoffs. Charles and I did a segment last month, and I was like, what if Burrow is washed? And I was kind of doing it tongue in cheek, and now that tongue's not like in my cheek as much anymore. It just didn't look right. I don't know what your takeaway is on that, but I had to throw that out there.
Yeah. You know, even Jamar Chase said something about, we do this every year where we start slow and like eventually we got to stop doing it. But so I'm kind of hesitant to totally bang on the Bengals, right, even though I almost didn't even want to talk about them because it was so pathetic that they don't
just
even
like
deserve
last year. And
just like last year. I just almost don't want to even give them airtime, but to put a point of emphasis on your Patriots run game, which, you mean, talk your shit about that, bro. I mean, you came on my show last week and talked about this Patriots run game, Ramondre Stevenson. I thought they looked great. You know, that right side of the line, David Andrews, Laydon Robinson played well in this game. Mike Nwenu is a good starting right tackle, much better than sort of the preseason hand-wringing about it being the worst offensive line of all time. These are your top two running backs in yards after contact in week one. 139, Ramondre Stevenson. Number two, Joe Mixon, 115. Total rushing yards for those two players, Joe Mixon 159, Ramondre Stevenson 120. I think, remember, I said 139 yards after contact for Ramondre Stevenson, 120 yards. I mean, that just great performance. I thought one of the best running back performances in week one.
It was very impressive. I liked him, but he looked even quicker. It was good. It was good to see, especially, you know, I had some injuries and stuff last year. So, all right, I gave you this one. I'm sorry about it. This is really the game that was the catalyst for this whole premise, because I want to make sure we talked about them all. So this is the Panthers at the Saints. Panthers lost 10-47. We're still on mild medium. I want to re-roll it, but Matt,
We don't want to okay. re-roll it.
All right, what's your take on this one?
The Panthers fans have had it bad enough. We do not want to re-roll this reel. So my mild take is I think the Saints offense is watchable again. I totally, totally want to remind both myself and the people, this is against the Carolina Panthers team, that in order to make their offense better, borrowed from the defense, right? Didn't spend any resources. In fact, got actively worse on that side of the ball, probably on purpose. Kind of sucks when your offense looks even worse than it did last season in week one. Not great when, like I said, you borrowed from that side of the ball. So I do want to just emphasize that, you know, even remind myself that the opponent here. However, the Saints were number one in pre-snap motion rate in week one. 88% of their dropbacks they had pre-snap motion on. Derek Carr had a 40% play action rate behind only Justin Fields and Anthony Richardson. He was dead last among quarterbacks, according to Pro Football Focus, 14.3%, like guys that started at least 50% of their, or 50% of the team.
He's good at it. That's the thing. Yeah. He's always been good at it. Yeah.
And he was dead last in 2023. Yeah. So they went from the basement of the league in pre-snap motion and play action to first and third. And I wrote about this in the offseason where I said, I do not think we are giving enough credit to the fact that New Orleans has not had new offensive ideas in almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Pete Carmichael was part of the original 2006 Saints staff. There were other members on that coaching staff that were part of that original 2006 Saints coaching staff. Clint Kubiak might not be the next Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan or anything like that. But geez, man, like we just saw what a little bit of modernization can do for this unit. And I get it. It's the Panthers. I can't believe they gave up the most obvious post route touchdown to Rashid Shaheed, one of the best post route dominators
deep
in the
ball
league.
Guys, yeah.
and some of it was, I think you're trying to dunk on the Panthers a little much with the Taysom Hill thing. Like we're throwing go routes off pre-snap motion to Taysom Hill. So we don't maybe need to do all that. But I just think that this offense is going to be, it's going to be a pretty good unit this year. I was not excited about it, but just again, not, I don't think we gave enough credit to the change that was coming here and all opponent caveats needed. I think we saw a lot of the results of that in week one.
Always like the phrase, not crap to, or crap to not crap. And usually I use that as like a player, like, oh, the center going from a bad center to an average center is still big improvement. You don't have to go from bad to Pro Bowler. Same with play callers. Sometimes you just need competency, and that's what a Kubiak is at least you have like, oh, all right, this is at least sound. And you know, Carr has always been kind of underrated as a, like, he is smart as like cerebral as kind of understanding. That's also kind of the double-edged sword of him, is he's so smart, he knows, he's like, no, I have to check it down here. It's like, oh, try it, push it a little bit. Play action gets him to push it a little bit because that's what the 1-2 of everything is. Hey, anything to see Shaheed and Olave look good, Kamara look good, I'm all for. Whatever tight end scores that week, I'm all for any of it. And not to rain on even more, or rain of pores with the Panthers, but then Derek Brown has a torn meniscus, and it's just like, I know. It's rough over there. I'm sorry, guys. I did like the Saints defense too. Like Chase Young looks fresh, and yeah, he was teeing off. So that's another thing too with the Saints defense. All right, moving on. Staying in the South, but the AFC South, we have the Texans and the Colts. 29-27. Texans win. Entertaining game. Still mild medium. Do I even have a good hot one here?
I know this is kind of hard to I feel like this is hard to have a good hot one.
Oh, I had a good hot one. I'll rub it in. But all right. So my mild take, I'm just using this as an excuse to get two takes off. All right. My mild take here, Texans run game will finish top 10 in the league. This look good. This look legit. They are a zone running team. They are a Shanahan offense all the way. There's different coaches. Not all the coaches there are Shanahan guys. And that's why some of their dropback stuff, especially on third down, is from different offenses. And I've noticed that. And guess what? They have a dude that can run them. It's CJ Stroud. So it's like, yeah, this is great. This is they're not going to reach this peak. I don't think so. But this is kind of how 2016 Falcons felt when you had a real dropback quarterback with the Shanahan offense. That was Matt Ryan. You know, like a true dropback guy and all that. Not saying reaching that peak.
It might, though. It might. Don't rule it out. It
looked really like it, though. But that's what this really feels like, because it's zone, zone, zone. Some boot stuff, some play action stuff, but then they can drop back and whip it to one of their talented receivers with some sound passing game stuff. But this run game, man, this would have been their second best game, if you include last year, in terms of rushing success rate. Mixon was at 56% success rate on 30 carries. Singletary's high, had one that was better, but he did on 16 carries. You're over 50% on 30 carries is like O-line coaches would dream for that in their career. Like that is like, you don't get that a lot for it, but you get that in one game. That's the first game. We'll see how this Colts defense is, but I thought at least the run game would be decent. Maybe they're scared of Stroud and Nico Collins. I would be too, but
yeah, Gus Bradley did say that actually. He said today that they lightened the boxes intentionally to deal
with too high. Yeah.
Yeah. With the receivers there. So that was a part of it, but of course, classic Gus was like, I was surprised by how well, how well it worked for them.
Oh, Gus. It's such a Gus defense, too. It's like I recognize everything from 10 years ago. But even the Texans, though, they improved. Like Kenyon Green at left guard, alert contract year, Kenyon Green. He looked like one of the most improved players in the entire NFL. And I will say that with my chest out in that first game. He looked like a weapon going from like, to like a very, very good player that looked like he was a first rounder. He looked awesome. He wasn't even perfect on it, too. But in the run game, running that zone stuff, Joe Mixon has a great feel for zone. That's his best type of run. It just really looked good. But like you said, we were just tying it again. When you get those light boxes with the passing game, the run game could benefit from it. And yeah, that run game looked really good. All right, I got to get my hot take off, though. So this is what I was hinting at with my AFC North thing. Three AFC South teams will make the playoffs is my hot take now. The Jags.
Jags take?
Texans and Colts, just after my initial feels for this. And it's a very hot take, but I'm not feeling great about the AFC North teams. I'm feeling much better about the AFC South teams, even if none of them are more complete as they should be.
We'll get to Jacksonville for sure. And put a pin in that, cause I'm curious to hear your thoughts on a very classic Jags loss in week one. But yeah, I came away from both of these two teams, Houston and Indianapolis, feeling great about the vision for both. Every Anthony Richardson game is going to be an annoying like Rorschach test. People are going to see what they want to see from it. But there are plays he absolutely left on the field for sure. But that throw to Alec Pierce is almost like a one of one throw like that. You can't count on one hand how many quarterbacks in the league would probably even. I mean, in like Gardner Minshew's greatest acid trip or fever dream, he wouldn't even imagine like, what if I made that throw down?
No, he wouldn't even try. No. Yeah. You don't even think of that. No. Us mortals do not fathom that throw.
Exactly. And this Texans offense, I wouldn't put the limit on it. I really think after seeing in week one, just the receiver usage, especially, is exactly what I pictured it to be. So, what it opens up for the run game and just having an adult in the room type of running back in Joe Mixon and just being following the blocks, reading it out. I was very impressed by the Texans as well.
Yeah. Yeah. The Richardson experience is the first pass went 5 yards over AD Mitchell's head. And the next one is one of the best throws you'll ever see in your life. But that's why I like the big arms.
Classic. Yeah.
He earned 6 first downs with one throw. Why complete it 10 times when you could just do one? I don't know. There's something with that. Moving on, another AFC West. We had the Raiders and the Chargers. The Raiders lost this game 10-22 in a quasi home game where you had with the Chargers fans waving bye.
The Chargers players were waving goodbye to the stands, implying obviously like, you know, go home to the fans in their home stadium.
LA's a Raider town. It really is. We landed on spicy. Yes. A little Southern California cuisine for you. All right, Matt, what's your spicy take from this game?
I mean, the Antonio Pierce era is over. It's over.
I wasn't sure how you're going to frame that. Okay. Okay.
I mean, dude.
This is just the 4th-and-1 decision.
Yes, that's the 4th-and-1 decision.
That's a canary in the coal mine for a lot. I agree. But yeah, keep going.
Dude, come on. The whole thing with Pierce, who I'm rooting for him, man. He has the locker room. The players love him. He probably has that job because Max Crosby was, you know, probably threatened ownership. You know what I'm saying? Like, so clearly the players love him. I want this to work out for Antonio Pierce. But dude, the whole ethos of this team is, and he said it 1,000 times the end last year and said it 1,000,000 times this offseason, is toughness and attitude and all of these things. And then you're going to punt in your own territory late in the game on 4th and 1. What are we talking about? Like, if it, to me, and it's such a harsh juxtaposition to the Chargers on the other side, who you can already feel from that team, like, oh, we believe we are tougher. Like, we believe whatever Jim Harbaugh is preaching, they're already buying. They already embody like that attitude from the head coach and the physicality. And, you know, J.K. Dobbins ripping off these explosive runs in the year 2024, 12 months after an Achilles, you know, and they're dominating. I mean, it was not perfect. It was not dominating at the line of scrimmage. Pass protection, I thought, was a big improvement on the on the tackle play. The run blocking, I thought, was better. Some classic Greg Roman stuff on that offense, you know, pre-snap penalties and the whole deal. I get it. But again, you could see a clear attitude adjustment from the Chargers. It's such a stark juxtaposition then to see Antonio Pierce, like, we're just going to punt on a 4th and 1 inside our own territory. Like, inside opposing territory late in the game. What are we doing here?
That one was just, like you said, it just takes away from, like, Dan Campbell from day one has been like, right, we're going to be tough. Even when they're winning 1, 2, 3 games, he's still going for a 4th down, still doing all the trick plays. Cause you don't just turn that on. You can't just go, we're tough now. You can't just switch that on. You have to start day one. That's just team building or anything, like, really organizational skills, you know? Like, so that I, there's been a lot of warning signs, you know, even stuff like the 30 plus member staff is always just like, why, like, who, you know, stuff like they practice late in the day. And I know that sounds silly, but it's like, they're the little organizational things that have been some warning signs for me on top of Gardner Minshew's the quarterback that they decided to go into the season with.
And that's the thing too, Nate, is they have Gardner Minshew at quarterback. You're going to have to win on the margins. Yeah. And you're not going to win. Right. You're not going to win on the margins if you're going to punt in that situation against a division rival. Like,
how many games? That's the thing. You have to be realistic about it. Like, how many games? I know they shouldn't know because they're in Vegas, but how many games do you think they are favored in? But they should know that. Like, be like, hey, man, like, we're going to be the underdogs because we have Gardner Minshew at quarterback. Like, we got to do some stuff. Like, we got to be tricky. We got to be like, that's like you said, that's how you create those little 1 percentage points going for a 4th down, 2-point conversions, you know, just little things like all those type of stuff. So, the Raiders just make me sad. The next up, speaking of teams that make me sad, we got the Jaguars at the Dolphins. Jaguars lost this game 17-20. At one point, they had a 90% win projection. Yep. And then proceeded to lose it. I got a spicy take. That's perfect. Because I only had a spicy take for this one. And that is my spicy take on this. The Jaguars, it was kind of one, it kind of sounded like one that you had earlier. The Jaguars defense is the best unit of the 4 units that played out there. Sorry, special teams. The Jaguars defense, though, was the most impressive unit. It was the most complete unit. It was the best unit in my eyes. Just reviewed this game this morning. Yeah, Ryan Nielsen, that dude can game plan. And that guy finds answers. The personnel for the Jaguars, Ryan Nielsen's defense coordinator for the Jags, how he used the personnel. I was optimistic about the Darnell Savage signing. He looked great. It's great when you see a player with confidence now get to play fast. They're using a lot of man coverage, which I saw, you know, I saw some fancy people getting on them about it, and they did it but it was great. They had all these varieties of man coverage. They're doing robber. They're pressing guys. They're rotating guys. There's a 3rd down example I tweeted out where it's man coverage, man coverage, man coverage. It looks like man. At me right now, like, I could just go, oh, that's man coverage. They had Foy Aluakon at the line of scrimmage, the linebacker. And so when the Dolphins, of course, ran their running back motion, because they put someone in motion every play, what the Jaguars did is they sprinted a safety down to cover the motion, and Aluakon now becomes the whole robber player. So that in man coverage, if you're not blitzing somebody, you have an extra player. And he's going to be in the middle reading quarterback's eyes. Everyone has different rules. So what they did is, based on the motion, they switched responsibilities, and Foy jumps, gets a tip ball, and they get off the field on 3rd down. They held Tua to his third lowest success rate, dropback success rate since Mike McDonald's got there in 2022. Even though he went 23 for 37, 338 yards, one touchdown, you look at that, you're like, oh, big day, 300 yards, saw the big play to Tyreek. It was really just two big plays that did a lot in this offense because they were clamped down on it. And I was really impressed. Trayvon Walker had a good game against the run, had a great sack later in the game. Different guys were really showing up. Their safeties played well. Cisco got beat a couple times, but if you're a step late against 4-2-5 Tyreek Hill, like, that's what happens. But man, I was optimistic about this defense, but even some of the stuff they did was very, very impressive. And I would say they're the most impressive unit, and I think will be the best unit of these four going on.
Yeah, on the man coverage stuff, you know, Fantasy Points Data has a bunch of tracking. They had them at 73.2% man coverage in week one. The next highest team was the Broncos at 46.4%. Oh, so
funny.
Crazy high. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how you can really criticize this defense after this performance. Even take out Football 301 and all the advanced stuff. The Dolphins scored 20 points.
Right. Good.
Yeah. At home in September. When they've scored 70 plus there before. I don't know if you guys remember that. So I agree with you. I came away from this very impressed. I haven't broken down like this game too much, but just watching it on Sunday, I was impressed with the performance of the Jaguars defense. I mean, honestly, like, yeah, you're going to give up 2-3 big plays to the Dolphins offense. It's just going to happen. But again, to hold them to 20 points, you had an opportunity to win this game, which I think makes it all the more frustrating for Jaguars fans that, you know, I did find it funny actually after the, I remember this popping up on Red Zone, but after the Tyreek Hill, I think the 80 yard touchdown or whatever, they immediately just show Travis Etienne on the sideline because it was his fumble, I think, that opened up this whole thing.
It was.
So yeah, super, super frustrating, classic Jags loss. But yeah, I agree with you. It won't get discussed enough because they lost the game that the Jaguars defense looked like a great unit in week one.
They're good. And I felt better about the offense until they clamped down on themselves. Yeah. Like Trevor, this is my Trevor stat, was he pushed the ball in the first half and it looked good. Like they weren't playing scared. He had 7 throws or 10 or more air yards for 102 yards, 5 completions, 1 touchdown, 1 drop. Second half, Yoda only had 1 pass to travel 10 or more air yards. It went for 22 yards, but they just got tight. And just kind of how this always feels with this team. Even when they play well, it just leaves you wanting more. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll wrap it up with the last couple games. All right, we are back to round it up. We got 2 games each left, so 4 games. I lied when I said couple. It's a couple times 2. Next up, we got the Cowboys at the Browns.
Please give me spicy on this.
Okay. Cowboys won this game 33-17. I see mild me. I know I'm going to pretend it's dark purple.
I'll give you both because neither one of these requires a ton of the spicy one doesn't require a nuanced breakdown. But the mild take here is just that Mike Zimmer is already a serious upgrade over Dan Quinn, I think. Yeah. I mean, just awesome. It was awesome. I think the way they played zone coverage in week one was exactly kind of how you want to mug things up in the modern NFL. And, you know, Cleveland, I did not have a Browns take on this one because, like, what the hell are you supposed to say? Congratulate. Yeah,
we all know
what we want to say here. So I, you know, the zone heavy background there with Dallas, they were fourth most in terms of zone coverage in week one. I just think that's exactly how you want to play things. You want to force the quarterback to take low percentage throws, and this particular quarterback makes the low percentage throws even lower. So it was a great, I think, game plan. I thought they truly held the point of attack in the run, which I thought was impressive and a departure from last year's Dallas Cowboys. So I get it. It's the Cowboys. It's September. Talk to me in, you know, January, the whole deal. Understand that. But I thought this was a nice just early test, early glimpse of this Cowboys team and what they might look like this season. My spicy take, we should never discuss contract disputes again in the offseason, Nate Tice. What a waste of time. What a colossal waste of time. The Cowboys, I think, maybe did on purpose just to get attention.
Make it exhausting for us. Yeah.
Because they gave CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott the exact deals the agents had to be asking for the entire time. I mean, what are we talking about? We wasted all that time the 11th hour and 59th minute for Dak to just go ahead and sign that deal. I think a lot of Cowboys panic. And look, I was definitely down on them when we did the top 10 offenses show. Kind of came around when we did the win totals pod, said they would go over 8.5. I actually feel pretty good about them now at this point, yeah. Especially after that defensive performance. That, and again, I realized they could just end up losing in January, but part of me, you know, at different points in the offseason, is like, yeah, why don't you just blow it up and try something different? But at the same time, there's some real foundation building blocks here. You know, Dak is a good quarterback. CeeDee Lamb's a great wide receiver. And there's talent on this defense. And if you just have sometimes it just takes someone else at the controls to maybe, just like it did when Dan Quinn got there, I think, you know, throw him in there, mix things up a little bit, play more man coverage and pressure the quarterback. Now you have something different. Mike Zimmer, I think, can provide that different dimension. Very impressed with Trayvon Diggs, by the way. I thought that was just a great Agreed. Game from him. You know, first game back off the torn ACL too. So a lot of good vibes, I think, in Dallas right now, and especially on that defense, where I do think Zimmer is going to provide a serious upgrade over Quinn.
Yeah, I feel even better about it. Right away, seeing third down, I saw the double mug looks, which is when two linebackers are over the center. And I was just like, oh, yeah, here we go, buddy. Yeah, this is great. And even getting into this is how the layers that football have gotten added, even when I first saw those double mug looks, probably like I first got exposed to them like in the NFL, like maybe like 2012-ish when I was leaving college and stuff. And now we get into the next step of that was offenses would bring another guy back to help with the protection, just to sort it out. Cowboys did it. Other teams have done it. And so now we got Zimmer's next step to that was, all right, show the double mug look. Offense brings another guy back up, back into the backfield. This case for the Browns is Njoku back into the backfield. And the Cowboys go, never mind. We're not doing it. And they back the linebackers back out. And what that does is it screws the offense because you're wasting two guys. Now they have to, because when you do those double split back looks, it's chip, check, and release. Or check, chip, and release. Sorry, I just ruined a coaching point. But they check the blitz. They have the Wills guy, Sam's guy. They chip on the way out, and then they release. And usually it's a flat route, a sit route, something short. But it's really half routes. Like, yeah, they get out, but they take 2 seconds to get there. So it's really a three-man route. And now we got 7 in coverage against 3 routes on fourth down or third down. That's just not a winning formula unless you have a dude at quarterback. Browns do not have a dude at quarterback. They do not. They have the opposite of a dude at quarterback. So it's, yeah, even the CeeDee Lamb at X, that go ball was sweet. The touchdown of Brandon Cooks was beautiful. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm feeling pretty good about where the Cowboys are. Oh, Marshawn Nealon had a good game. Their rookie DN from Western Michigan. Always mix them up. But yeah, that was they look pretty good.
I mean, just serious linebacker play, brother. That's not been
Overshawn.
That's not, yeah, Overshawn. That's not been a thing in Dallas the last couple of seasons. And yeah, I know the McCarthy stuff always gets people fired up, but you look at last season as a whole, and you're like, you want to build on that, not tear it down. So
correct.
I wouldn't say I've gone full 180 on Dallas, but definitely come out of it. Now that everything's just settled there, now I feel like we can talk about this team like serious adults, even if sometimes they're not run like serious adults. And that this feels great after week one.
I'm not shrugging my shoulders at them anymore.
Right.
All right, moving on. There's one I'm shrugging my shoulders at. Next up, we got the Broncos at the Seahawks in the Russell Wilson Bowl. We have, or whatever the bowl was, the Percy Harvin Bowl. Too. The Broncos lost this game 20-26. Oh, I got a spicy take. Which is good because mine's one sentence here. I don't think Bo Nix is it. That's my spicy take. And I know it's one game in, but this is exactly what I was worried about, guys. And this is what I've been saying for the last month. And there's a workable foundation for this offense. I think the run game will get there. And I'm not saying, oh yeah, this quarterback will never be able to make it. This is just the exact performance in the first game where I thought it'd be a little easier as they game plan some stuff. They've known he's the starter for a few weeks now, and they went as simple as the offense can get. And on top of it, anytime he had to push the ball past, shoot, I wouldn't even say 10 yards. I'd say 5 yards. It was this might get picked. There's different, and this is, again, this is process and results. Sometimes a guy throws a pick, or a guy can finish a game with 3 picks, and it's you come away and you're like, actually, it wasn't that bad. He was trying to squeeze that win in there. He got unlucky on that one. Sometimes a guy throws no picks, and you're like, God dang, he should have been picked off 5 times, 7 times, because the read was bad. He wasn't just trying to throw it into a tight window. He was straight up throwing into the wrong window. There's a difference between tight windows and wrong windows. Bo Nix was doing the wrong window, and he was doing it late. The second pick was the worst example of it. And again, it's a rookie quarterback and everything. And this is where my concerns are. His whole shtick, the argument for Bo Nix was that he was a ready-made quarterback. He's the second oldest quarterback drafted in the last 15 years after Brandon Weeden, in first round, I should say. This is what you're supposed to come in there and run day one, day two install stuff and be okay at it and let the run game work and everything's okay. Like, we have the 16th best offense because everything's okay. I never thought he could do that because I don't think he can push the ball. And I think he's a little too chaotic. I will say only two quarterbacks broke 20 miles an hour this weekend, and that was Jane Daniels and Bo Nix. He is a good athlete. He can run. I will give him that. But passing game wise, I think they're just sledding uphill, and I don't want to be outright negative after one game. I do think there is a line to he can start and be a viable starter. This is just this is scarier and maybe a little more of an uphill sledding than even I thought. So that's my hot take. It's pretty hot, but yeah,
that's pretty hot.
I know, but that's concerning.
You called it
that's
his shtick. You said you didn't want to be too harsh, but you said his shtick.
Like, it was him that did it too. I know. It's not even his fault. I know.
It's not his fault.
But this is why I liked him on day two, because this is, I don't know. And I think we're in a new world now. And I've talked this with friends. It's just, I think we're in a new world with what quarterback's taken in the first round. And I can still grade guys differently, but guys get taken first round. But the thing is, you know, I know they have to play earlier, but his whole thing was that he was supposed to be ready to play early. So it's, yeah, I was not optimistic after viewing that game and reviewing it afterwards either.
I shouldn't say someone, the producer Colin, from the Fantasy Podcast.
I know him.
sent me the tweet about how Bo Nix reached the second fastest top speed of anyone on any rushing play, behind only Tank Dell, pretty fast player. And we were joking that, you know, tired, Sean Payton just got his new Drew Brees and Bo Nix. Wired, Sean Payton just got his new Taysom Hill in Bo Nix. So.
Man, there's a way that it can work. It's just that I thought the initial returns would be a little more. I thought the floor would be a little higher, and I think the floor is a little lower than I was expecting. So yeah, I know it's 1 week. I know all this. Just let him get to the bye, but that is pretty concerning. All right, next game up, featuring another rookie quarterback. This is the Commanders at the Bucks. Bucks won this game 37-20. We are spinning the wheel. This is a Mac game.
I'm nervous if I get
spicy. Willed into existence. Let's hear it.
Dan Quinn is going to be one and done. Is my spicy take on this one. I think that they will probably have the worst defense in the league.
Yeah, I think so too.
We discussed this, I think, on this show when we were talking about the win totals, where you just start looking at the defensive depth chart, you know, before the season. We're doing this one again. We're doing... Cleveland Farrell is one of our biggest edge rushers here. You know, we got Bobby Wagner playing, and then you see it in action, and it's actually worse than you could think. My mild take on this was the Bucks offense is better this year than last year. And part of my big caveat, if I was going to make that take, was let's remember again, adjust for opponent competition right here. So my two takes might be kind of they're contradicting each other in some way, or there's in conflict
but
here,
correlated.
But to stick on the Washington one too, the defense definitely could be the worst in the league, which is rough because Dan Quinn is a defensive coach. Secondly, though, I mean, offense was just as unimaginative as you could possibly imagine. And what's so frustrating about this, Nate, is that in a league where we've got people, you know, offensive coordinators, play callers, doing so much with motion at the snap and pre-snap motion to get our best players free. What did we just talk about with the Eagles all the way at the top?
Right.
They're doing this stuff for A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown doesn't need you to do any of that, okay? A.J. Brown could line up at X receiver and kick everybody's ass out there on a snap-by-snap basis. But you know what makes everyone's life easier is if you do some of this motion stuff with him. Meanwhile, you've got Cliff down here. You've got one good pass catcher. You've got one good pass catcher in Terry McLaurin, and you've got him stuck over there on the left side of the field, never in motion. And meanwhile, because it's like, oh, motion, good motion. We should do more motion, but you're just motioning around Olamide Zaccheaus, and you know, no disrespect to these players, but it's just a lot of non-needle movers. And I would be less concerned about that if that wasn't the exact same thing we saw in Arizona. So you've got Jaden Daniels, who. I don't even want to give like a Jaden Daniels take because he's a rookie quarterback in his first start.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's
after I just gave a Bo Nix scorcher.
After you just slammed a rookie quarterback in his first start, me as an arbiter of fairness and justice, I will not do that. you know, because I'm the nice guy here. I've said a coach is going to be one and done. But yeah, I mean, Jaden Daniels, rookie quarterback, first start. He definitely did the Wile E. Coyote stuff, some of the crazy, you know, runs and things like that. But he's got no shot behind this offensive line. He's got no shot with these receivers. And I just don't think he's going to be set up to succeed. So Washington could easily be the worst team in the league this year. And because in the context of, I don't even really know how jazzed up they were to hire this staff to begin with. No matter what they say, I don't think this was the plan. I think we could just easily see them cleared out this year, which is unfortunate. I'm not rooting for that, but that is my spicy take.
Especially when they're not the offensive play caller, you know, too. And, you know, that's usually you can hold that card, you know, unless you're Hackett. I can just go like, hey, you want me to run this offense, right?
I just drafted this guy. You want to ruin his career already?
Right? Yeah. You want to switch the coaches? Yeah. I will say just it is so much like the Cardinals offense. It really is. It's back when Cliff was there. The best parts about it is not the parts you would think. It's the run game is the best part, not even including Daniels running. I'm talking about just a straight up run game.
It's exciting. Yeah,
it is. It's the best
two
part.
Leading receivers were the backs, man.
I mean, I know, but that's what it is. It's a nickel and dime offense. And anyone that's surprised by that, like that's what this offense was in Arizona. It was the same thing. Guys on left and right sides, no motion, very predictable formations too, where everybody's on an island, you know, split out the tight end, which limits some other stuff you can get to. Yeah, and just the personnel is not overwhelming enough. You just brought up A.J. Brown, and the highest compliment I can give a player, especially a receiver, though, is scheme-proof, meaning they don't need the best play caller. They don't need the motion. That's A.J. Brown. He can line up in whatever and do whatever, and it's good. Not everyone is that. And so you need, like, I'm just kind of reiterating your point, is you need a little help with this. And yeah, Daniels, I thought his eyes came down a little bit quickly, you know, especially against the blitz. He got sacked a couple times. But the thing was, Duke can run. And I mean, they didn't have answers for it at first. They figured out some things as the game went along. But Daniels is fast, which we knew. But it's nice to see it in the NFL, you know, NFL terms. Wasn't taking hits early either, which was good until the very end of the game where he decided, I'm going to get socked three times in a row in the face right at the goal line, which is like, you guys are losing by three scores, man. You know how much money you have invested in this guy? This guy's worth more than the entire coaching staff. Like, what are you guys doing? Sorry. That stuff kind of irks me a little bit, but he had the eighth highest scramble rate in the past 5 years, minimum 20 dropbacks. Would have been first of all of last year. But the thing was, and I will say this, really successful throwing the ball. He didn't throw the ball a ton, but he was good throwing the ball. My negative stat, again, on the flip side of those scrambles, and this was my issue with him in college, didn't throw once on the move. Every time he moved, he scrambled. Yeah. Kirk Cousins had more throws on the move than Jaden Daniels did in week one.
What?
Kirk Cousins had one. Jaden Daniels had zero. The touchdown to Kyle Pitts, where he broke her out. I looked at next gen stats. Yeah. So Kirk Cousins had one. Jaden Daniels had zero throws on the move, something he has to get better at because he can't just scramble all day. It's just hard. But yeah, the defense is very concerning. Last game here, Sunday Night Football, the Stafford Goffel.
A palate cleanser, honestly.
Yes. Rams-Lions. Lions won this game 26-20. Entertaining game. Ooh, spicy take. My hot take. My spicy take for this game. This is one of my games. The Lions defense will rank higher. I don't know what we're going with, but they'll rank higher than the Lions offense this year.
Ooh.
I was more impressed by the defense than the offense, even though the offense, of course, especially at the end, that run game. Oh, that was after my own heart.
Yeah.
Just pound it down their throats. And Braden Fisk. Yeah, it's a little tough. It's a little tough to hold up against Penei Sewell double teams over and over and over. That's just how it goes. I had a little, you know, some of the offensive stuff with the Lions. I have to review this game again because I just wanted to see everything going. You know, Goff felt like he was under duress a little bit. I did think the offensive line, I love their offensive line, but you know, how they're coached and everything, but maybe take that half step back. So, but this is also a compliment to their defense. I thought they did a good job against this Rams offense. That's not easy to go against, especially with all these young guys, new faces. I think the run defense is hard to play against. Again, this is a really good Rams run game and really creative one, even if they had woes, you know, with injuries and stuff. I do feel good about this defense, seeing them more just, you know, for the first time in action, seeing it actually unfold a little bit. That, yeah, I'm optimistic about, which makes me even more optimistic about this team. It's kind of had some thoughts on this, but this, yeah, just overall, I just was more impressed about the defense. So I'm still saying this is more like seventh and eighth. I'm not saying like top five defense and 20th offense. I'm just saying that they're more in line together, which is good for the Lions than maybe just really good offense and poor defense, which, again, we had theories and thoughts about. Also have a mild take that I thought you would like.
Oh, what's the mild take?
Rams should trade for Rashad Bateman. But that's more of an...
I mean, that would be great. You mean the second leading receiver on the Ravens?
Of what, two targets?
Yeah. Well,
just look catches. His way, Lamar. He's open.
I mean, my God, yeah. Well, let's not go down the that path particularly.
I thought it'd be a good way to end the pod if I did end up with the mild take.
I like that. Yeah, that would be awesome. Although my worry about the Rams is that this feels very 2022 Rams, where we're back to fantasy bros are at the full 3.9 on Cooper Kupp, 20 targets. It's like, yeah, then they scored fewer points than Kupp had targets. Not 21 targets, 20 points. Not
that's
what you want.
That's not what you want.
The offensive line is injured. So that's part of the Lions' defensive take here. Let's see them, you know, against some starting tackles. But
yeah,
you know, my Aiden Hutchinson Defensive Player of the Year prediction is live, baby. Let's go. My just last question to you on this is this. Do you have any concerns about the Lions offense, like big ones? Because I thought the Jameson Williams, you know, emergence, I think it's going to force us, if he can stack these performances, which obviously we need to see him stack the performances, does give them a whole new dimension, but also does kind of take them away a little bit from their bread and butter, which is, you know, attacking the middle of the field.
I feel like their strength has gotten weakened and one of their weaknesses has gotten better, which was they have more passing game options. I thought Jameson Williams, that's exactly how I pictured him. Like even his first catch was like a real dig route or inbreaker, if I might be mixing it up, but then he had
some
the
kind 90, of inbreaking route. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a real route. It wasn't just, and then we see him on the touchdown, which was how you probably picture Jameson Williams getting used, which is literally, this is the play call. 99 is a go route. Just run past everybody and the quarterback get protected and throw it as far as he can. Like that is,
he ran past Tre'Davious White. I mean, when I'm charting, you know, if guys got open or not. Yeah. That's a yes. Just for the methodology, yes. Bros. That's a
yes. Yes. Explosive. Yes. Yeah. That's easy. So I feel like his improvement is real. Like that was not a flash in the pan. I feel you saw growth last year. I'm more really the take should be the offensive line has made me it's just hard because I don't want this to come out that I'm like, this is a glaring concern. It's just that I thought this offensive line is the best offensive line in the league, kind of hands down, or at least pretty easy. And now I'm more like, oh, it might be more just good as opposed to fantastic, and really just the slight drop-offs that they have. And so it's like, if Ragnow gets hurt, that gets me really scared about that interior. So, and this offense is built on running the ball, and Goff doesn't do well with pressure. So I'm just pulling at that thread a little bit, but overall I'm optimistic about the Lions because how that defense did play overall. So, whew, did we get it in? Oh no, I owe Brett a video game or drink, whatever I owe him. But oh, yes,
whatever.
The people
will like it, and we are a podcast for the people.
Sorry, Ravens, Chiefs, we didn't talk about your teams. I'm sorry.
We talked a little bit Rashee Rice and this again, the second leading receiver from the Baltimore Ravens. We talked about both of those players.
We did. No, it's a great call. Oh, Rashee Rice looks so, so good. That's what I pictured. It's awesome. But we're closing it out today. Be back on Thursday with Football 301. Chuck is joining me. We're going to preview the week 2 games. This is our schedule now. Next week, we'll be back. Matt and I will be doing more recap, just week 2. Hopefully not all 16 or 15 games, maybe more, a little bit more 5-6, get a little deeper on them. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. Where can they find you, Mr. Matt Harmon?
Yeah, Matt_BYB. And looking forward to having you on the fantasy show tomorrow for the fantasy film room, where I definitely want to break down this Eagles run game in depth. So that we'll do some depth on that tomorrow.
Yeah, make sure you check it out. Yeah, that'll be great. And I'm going to try and get some visual elements on this show once we get a little more deep dives, and I can kind of, once trends start, I have some theories, but we'll see once some more data points get in here. But to hear us in a few weeks or next week or later this Thursday, subscribe to us, follow us, rate us pretty, pretty please. Also, watch us on YouTube, the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Also follow Yahoo Sports on Snapchat too, if you're into that. Also send in mailbag questions. Once we get to those, football301mailbag@yahoosports.com. We're going to start getting to a few of those as the weeks go on. Again, thanks to Brett Stonati behind the scenes. Thank you to you, Matt. Thank you to everyone for listening. See you all on Thursday.